Overhead Door Company, the original garage door company, serving you for over 90 years. Call 843-767-0028 or overheaddoorco.com. Overhead Door Company of Charleston, proud to open hour two of the Morrow Midday Show.
This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Guess who's back, 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 back again. Sadie's back, back, back. Tell a friend, friend, friend. Guess who's back, 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 guess who's back.
Second hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. We'll talk some golf with our resident golf expert coming up in just a few moments, Jeremy Schilling, who joins us every Wednesday. If you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand, ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. Just find us there. Search ESPN Radio Charleston. The show is also available on demand online at charlestonsportsradio.com or through our free app. Search ESPN Charleston in the App Store. We were joined last hour by Blake Brockermeyer, longtime NFL lineman, played at Texas, now covers college football after coaching in college football as we continue to get ready for the upcoming college football season. And with that season right around the corner, ESPN Radio Charleston wants to kick off the season with a good old-fashioned golf tournament next Thursday, August 19th. At the Links at Stono Ferry. Come out and represent your college team with your foursome at Stono Ferry. Because, how about this, the winning foursome next Thursday will score tickets to the homecoming game of their favorite college team, courtesy of ESPN Radio Charleston 98.9 FM. So head on over to charlestonsportsradio.com, register today, pick the school you'll be playing for while you still can. We're down to four foursomes left. So hurry up. Go fill those out before it's too late. CharlestonSportsRadio.com. We have schools represented, such as now Notre Dame, Maryland, NC State, obviously Clemson and South Carolina. We have Ohio State, West Virginia, I believe Michigan. I think there's a UNC in there. Georgia, if I haven't said them yet. So, still a few spots left. CharlestonSportsRadio.com to register today. And how about this? A portion of the proceeds will be donated to Fan Talk Families to benefit the Ronald McDonald House. So not too bad. If your foursome wins, you'll get tickets to homecoming, a framed photo of your team's stadium to hang on the wall, and some other school swag as well. Next Thursday, August 19th at the Links at Stono Ferry, the kickoff to college football golf tournament. Sign up while you still can today. Register your foursome at charlestonsportsradio.com. Only four spots left. We talk golf every Wednesday, speaking of golf, with our resident golf expert, Jeremy Schilling, who you can find on Twitter at jschill. He writes for PGA Magazine, and he's with us now. Jeremy, good afternoon. How are you?
Still no Hawaii?
Yeah, no Hawaii just yet. We're holding it for you.
All right.
You find three other Hawaii fans.
Fly me down on the private plane of the station.
Perfect. I'll see what
we
can do.
I am well. It is hot and humid in New Jersey.
Yeah. Well, it's been getting hot and humid around here, and I actually welcome it because we got rain for like 2 weeks straight. So I welcome the sun, the humidity, the heat once again as we gear up for college football. But let's talk some golf. Abraham Anser won the FedEx St. Jude Invitational in, stop me if you heard this before, another playoff, right? We had another playoff. What were your takeaways from the FedEx St. Jude Invitational?
Another multi-hole playoff.
Wow.
At that. So let's back up before we move forward. This event was Bryson DeChambeau and Harris English on Sunday trying to have a pretty cool battle. And Cam Smith was also lurking. Cam Smith shot 72 in the par 70. Bryson shot 74, shooting 41 in the back nine. We'll get to him in a second. Ian Poulter shot 2 over 72. Scotty Scheffler shot 4 over 74. Harris English shot 3 over 73. And lo and behold, you are seeing leaderboard gravity, the concept Mike Tirico always talks about, happening right before our eyes. And that allowed three guys who have been off the radar to launch into this playoff. Abe Anser shoots a 2 under 68. He had been lurking in the right area. He shoots 68. No bogeys in the back nine. Sam Burns shoots 64 to come from nowhere and overcomes a double bogey on the 13th hole to get into the playoff. And Hideki Matsuyama, who lost, you may remember, in that 7-for-1 playoff for the bronze medal in Tokyo, he also makes no bogeys in the back nine, shoots 63, and he ends up in a playoff. So we've got two competing storylines. We have what happened to Bryson and Harris English, which we'll get to in a moment, and then we have these three gentlemen in the playoff, Matsuyama trying to win a week after losing the bronze medal in his home country, Sam Burns looking for his second win of the year, Abe Anser looking for his first, and Hideki obviously looking for his first win since the Masters win. And this took two playoff holes, because Hideki hit a lip, and Abe decided, all right, I've had enough of this, and hit it to 6 feet, 1 inch on the second playoff hole. He makes birdie. Sam Burns stuffed it in there a couple inches inside of him on a very similar line, but the putt was never high enough and never really had a chance. And Abraham Anser, the guy everybody knew was going to win a PGA Tour event someday and someday soon, had been trending in the right direction, gets the victory and everything that comes with it. A huge moment for Abraham, who has dual citizenship between the U.S. and Mexico, becomes the fourth Mexican to win on the PGA Tour, second this season, Carlos Ortiz being the other. But very, very big deal for the border area down southwest of San Antonio, because Abe wants to make a big dent in Mexican youth golf. There are not a lot of easy, free, safe public golf opportunities for kids in Mexico, and especially where he grew up. He wants to change that. And when you win $2+ million, Luke, you can do that.
Yes, that certainly helps. So Anser gets the win. As he said, everyone else, right, went in the wrong way. Anser stepped up. He wins the playoff. When you see something like that with the changes on the leaderboards and some guys take a step back on a Sunday, is it a coincidence? Was there something that went into that? Is it the pressure of the final round? When you see that much movement or guys take those steps back, you know, what goes into that?
Normally, there's a lot of factors, but for English and Bryson, there actually is a story here. So let me get into it.
Sure.
Because this is a unique case. Bryson DeChambeau hit his ball up against a boundary fence on the sixth hole. To make a very long story short, in golf, you need to figure out if it's inbounds or out of bounds, because unlike a water, a pond or something, there's a whole bunch of different rules if you almost hit it out of bounds. It took a very long time. They needed string. They needed to figure out if the ball was in or out. It was in by a quarter of an inch. And he then had to get a subsequent drop from a cart path. It took a while. Bryson, by nature, being as science-based as he is a slow player. Harris is a fast player. They were put on the clock shortly after. They got a second bad time. They were warned big time. And as Harris said afterwards, he felt like he was running the entire back nine. That is not a way to play a golf hole. Add in a golf round in general. And obviously, being a PGA Tour final round, it's not the way to play that either. Add into that the fact that the wind was swirling a bit and that the 11th hole has water all over it, and you've got a disaster on your hands. Harris's problem and Bryson's problems are two different things. Harris made too many poor swings, too many misjudgments out of the Bermuda rough on the back nine. He came home in 40 with a double on 11 and a double on 14, basically shanking it into the water on the 14th hole. Bryson's problems run deeper. Bryson right now really needs to take a step back and figure out how he needs to handle crowds on the PGA Tour. There are two writers, Shane Ryan of Golf Digest and Ryan Lavner of GolfChina.com, who walked with that final group in the back nine this past Sunday. It was a lot of heckling. It was borderlining, and Shane's words, on abuse, clearly not the type of atmosphere you want to be playing in Lavner's terms. the Brooksy's chance are being launched at Bryson. Now, there's a couple of things that happened with Bryson last week. This was his first opportunity to play since getting COVID-19 and talking to the media. His comments about the vaccine did not sit well with a lot of people. Mm-hmm. This is a sports program, not a news program, and thus I will not go any further on this, but just Google Bryson COVID-19 and you'll figure this out. He did not talk to print reporters, Luke, for the rest of the week. Mm. He only talked to TV. Add into that the fact that he is walking down these fairways, constantly hearing Brooksy chants, and Brooksy being launched at him. So he's a science guy who some have him questioning what science he's referring to. He's being heckled because of his past actions, and he does not seem to have the ability to handle things going wrong. You could see as he was hitting the ball too far from the get-go on Sunday and getting his yardages wrong and misreading lies, and the fact that, you know, Bermuda Rough was just flying the ball forever in hot weather, that he just was losing his cool. You could see him get hot under the collar, and that's not a way to try to make a comeback to make a playoff. He really, I think, needs to do some kind of a, hey, I've messed up, I apologize, I'm going to listen, I'm going to listen to my peers, I'm going to learn, and I'm going to try to get better. Because right now, he is hurting himself more than helping himself. He also needs to embrace the heckles being hurled at him. Because right now, it's a mob against him. And Luke, you've called a lot of sports. You've called college sports. I think if you are in the college sports area, you have to accept that heckling is going to happen. Am I wrong on that?
No, and certainly if you want to be just be an athlete in general, you know that comes with it. If you want to be any sort of public figure, even outside of sports, especially with social media nowadays, you know that coming with that territory is going to be a lot of barbs or criticism or complaints from the public, fair or otherwise, and you have to find a way to be able to deal with it.
And to be fair, what he was being hurled on Sunday had nothing to do with his COVID vaccine comments. This is the Brooksies. This is a non-vulgar chant about a beef that's happening off the course. And it is clear that this beef has gotten under his skin. And in a way that Koepka has been able to really just shrug it off and just live his life normally, Bryson is not. And that, I think, is the interesting thing. If it was heckling about a controversial issue or cursing or some kind of derogatory or offensive language, that's one thing, but this is just being called Brooksy, and he can't handle it. That is a big problem, and a talented guy like him has to address this soon, or else he's going to have big problems going forward, because this is not ending anytime soon. And guess what next week's PGA Tour event is, Luke?
What's that?
Playing in front of New York crowds. Have fun with that one.
Yeah, you're not kidding. You're going to be there heckling him. You'll be yelling Brooksy at him next.
I will not. No. I will politely applaud when it is the correct opportunity.
Of course. Now, you already kind of answered my follow-up, but I'll ask it anyways. So it seems like we can tie these struggles for DeChambeau back to this whole thing with him and Koepka. That seems to be the culprit here with the issues he's dealing with?
That and his equipment. I don't think he's settled on fixing the equipment issues. He had a lot of befuddled looks on Sunday where he's looking at his clubs like, did you mess up? Did I not factor in the drone leading to 0.00002 miles per hour more of wind? Like, something's gone awry equipment-wise with him where he's not playing and hitting these clubs the way he was last season.
Talking with Jeremy. So, yeah, go ahead.
There's a problem there he's got to fix.
Talking with Jeremy Schilling, our resident golf expert on Twitter at Jay Schill, writes for PGA Magazine, joins us every Wednesday. We'll see what DeChambeau can do moving forward. But we have the Wyndham Championship going on this weekend starting tomorrow. What should we expect from that this weekend?
Yes, and I actually forgot to put something on the rundown that I wanted to mention. Nelly Korda won the Olympic gold medal for the women. Mm-hmm. Number one ranked player in the world world-class golf and survive a furious comeback from Iname of Japan and the wonderful player from India, Lydia Ko, sneaks in and gets a medal. Just to win an Olympic gold medal when you are number one in the world is extraordinary. And the run she is on right now is just absolutely extraordinary golf. And I just wanted to acknowledge that. But final week of the PGA Tour regular season. And by the way, it is Didi Ashok from India who gets that fourth place finish. Iname the silver, Lydia Ko the bronze. Final weekend of the PGA Tour regular season. A whole bunch of guys need to make a move to make the playoffs. That includes such names as Patrick Rogers, Matt Kuchar, Ricky Fowler, Tommy Fleetwood, Justin Rose, Rory Sabatini, Francesco Molinari, guys that are household names and are world-class players but are on the outside looking in. Even a guy like Bill Hawks, who's a world-class player, is 196 in the standings coming in. Sedgefield Country Club, Greensboro, North Carolina, old-style golf course. It's about hitting the ball in the fairway to get it onto the greens. Gary Woodland played really well last week in the opposite field PGA Tour event that was won by Eric Van Rooyen of South Africa. Gary Woodland is my pick for this week. I really think this is a golf course made for him. He dialed back a bit of the distance, gotten his consistency in a good place. But I would not be surprised to see if Ricky Fowler sneaks up there. He needs a minimum 21st place finish to try to sneak in that top 125. He's not at risk for losing his status or anything, so you can kind of freewheel it. And don't forget about Will Zalatoris. He's battling a back issue, but he also needs to win to make the playoffs, even though he'd be in the 20s, top 30 in the standings if he was a member. Weird, quirky things, but those are the guys to watch this week.
All right, for the Wyndham Championship this weekend. Jets-Giants preseason football Saturday night. As a Jets fan, diehard Jets fan, how excited are you for the battle of MetLife Stadium, Jets-Giants Saturday?
The Snoopy Bowl, if you remember
right.
The Rex
yes.
Ryan days.
Yes.
How he
right.
ruined Mark Sanchez's career with the Jets. On a scale of 1 to 10, I'm about a 1 on the excited scale. I could care less. And here's why, Luke, and I'm not trying to be a downer or anything. My gauge for preseason football has basically gone from very interested to I don't think it's a good enough place to get any kind of determination about your team. Maybe special teams. And the Jets do have kicker issues right now, but I think for Zach Wilson, it's like, okay, can you at least make competent throws? That's like my, very low barometer of what I would like him to go. I think the NFL preseason has gotten so diluted that you just can't make any firm judgments. So no, I'm not excited at all.
Ah, all right. Well, I'll watch it for you instead Saturday night. And we'll see how.
Trust me. I was at a wedding on Saturday. I woke up Sunday and heard all about Zach Wilson's poor scrimmage performance. So there are people around here who care. Trust me.
Oh,
I'm
of course.
Not one of them.
Yes, absolutely. He's Jeremy Schilling on Twitter at @jschill. Writes for PGA Magazine. Joins us every Wednesday. He's our resident golf expert and a tortured Jets fan to boot as well. Jeremy, appreciate the time as always, and we'll catch up with you next week. We'll see how maybe Zach Wilson does in the meantime.
Just try to stay healthy, guys. Just really don't put him out there for more than like 2 series.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Yeah, appreciate it as always, Jeremy. Joins us every Wednesday. Yeah, especially now the NFL preseason, now that we're going to 3 games, I see, right, Aaron Rodgers, Matt LaFleur said, yeah, Rodgers isn't going to play. You see all these coaches coming out now. Ben Roethlisberger isn't going to play this week either for the Steelers in their second game. So the preseason was already kind of irrelevant for the stars of the team, the starters. Now that you take away that extra game, maybe you thought it would go the opposite direction. Right? They only have 3 games. They better play more. But now you only have 3 games to break down the rest of your roster, right? To find out who those last spots will be. You already know what Ben Roethlisberger, Aaron Rodgers, what those guys are. They don't need the reps. And we're seeing this trend that kind of started with Sean McVay, and then the Rams made the Super Bowl that year, where McVay played none of his starters. In fact, I think he's already come out and said, you will not see Matt Stafford at all this preseason, I think is what he said. Or at least he said that about one of his stars. You're not going to see him at all. McVay started that. They went to the Super Bowl, and other teams looked around. Right, they were really healthy that year, and other teams thought, like, ooh, maybe that's the way to go. Why play these guys in preseason and use up some of their reps? Let's keep them healthy. But I just like football. I watch Canadian football. I watch the CFL, so what do I care? I'll watch the third strings this weekend for the Falcons and the Panthers just because football's on my TV. And we're getting reports that Zach Wilson doesn't look so good anymore, like Jeremy referenced. I'm not surprised. Now, it's very early. We can't jump the gun on this. I don't think Zach Wilson's going to work out in the NFL, but he's more like a Josh Allen than he is a Trevor Lawrence or a Joe Burrow. Right? Joe Burrow came in, high expectations, top pick, had success right away prior to his injury. Trevor Lawrence, I think, will be the same this year. Top pick, high expectations. I think you'll watch Trevor Lawrence this year in Jacksonville, and maybe the Jaguars won't be very good, but you'll see it. Oh, yeah, this kid, right? He's got something. Just like you saw at Clemson. He's going to be good in the NFL. I think you're going to watch Zach Wilson this year. You're going to see a lot of struggles, kind of like Tua last year. Josh Allen before that. Now, Josh Allen could have went one of two ways, of course. Right? As a quarterback, when you struggle early on, okay, you're either going to turn it around or you're going to continue to struggle and not work out. And it took Josh Allen to year three. You could see the potential. He has the arm talent, big body. He's athletic. He would make some crazy, every once in a while, he'd make some head-shaking throws. Then he'd make a crazy throw, and you could see that potential there. Like, ooh, if you could just unlock it or if you could develop that. He's still a little raw. You could see the good and the bad. And it took to year three. He kind of unharnessed the good stuff, right? He found his accuracy, started making smarter decisions, becoming more comfortable, reading defenses. Josh Allen now, we believe, one of the better quarterbacks in the league. I think Zach Wilson will be similar. I think he struggles the first probably 2 years. Then we'll find out what he really is by then. You'll see some of those flashes, big arm. He'll make some plays. He'll run around in the backfield, get away from pressure. You'll see that potential and think, like, wow, there could be something here. We won't see it right away like a Trevor Lawrence. A Trevor Lawrence, I think, even week one, you'll say, oh, yeah, this is an NFL quarterback. He's comfortable out there, has the skill set, doesn't look rattled like Joe Burrow last year. You could tell right away, oh, yeah, Burrow, right? He doesn't look like a rookie. He looks good to go. I think that'll be Trevor Lawrence. I think Zach Wilson will be more like the Tua, who's getting yanked in the fourth quarter. I think he'll be more like the Josh Allen, who everyone thought was a bust 2 years in. And then we'll find out by maybe year three if Zach will actually turn it on. But I don't think it'll be as smooth of a transition for him to the NFL. And I don't think the Jets are going to be very good either, so that doesn't help. Coming up, appreciate the time from Jeremy as always. Coming up, a new sports documentary. Is it worth checking out? We'll get to that next. It's the Morrow Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Coming up, we got ourselves a new sports documentary. Is it worth checking out? It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Appreciate the time. Last segment from Jeremy Schilling, who joins us to talk golf every Wednesday. If you ever miss anything from the show, such as that conversation, you can find it on demand. Search ESPN Radio Charleston however you listen to your podcast. The show is also podcasted online at charlestonsportsradio.com or through our free app. Download ESPN, our app, by searching ESPN Charleston to download it. Search ESPN Charleston in the App Store and find the show on demand through the app. Jeremy broke down the struggles of Bryson DeChambeau, which I find interesting. Right? Did he bite off more than he could chew with this whole ordeal with Brooks Koepka? Is that leading to the downfall? You know, most people want to be liked. Or you may not care, but you don't want to be disliked. There are certain people that can play the role of like a heel, an enemy, the opposite of a fan favorite. Wrestling's built on it. If you're in wrestling, right, so half of the federation, half of the company, they're going to be like the baby faces. They're going to be the ones the fans root for. Maybe the other half are going to be the ones that will get the opposite reaction, the ones that the fans boo. And some guys really enjoy that. They get a kick out of that. They rather, because it's not serious, right, you're playing a role, they're booing. You'd rather be the guy that gets that reaction. Sometimes that's the bigger reaction. So you want to play that role. In sports, we always need those villains as well. Like an Aaron Rodgers seems like he doesn't really care. Right? Rodgers doesn't care what you think. He's going to be honest. He's going to do what he wants. If you think he's a jerk, if you think he's a bad, like, he doesn't seem to care. It doesn't bother him. Some people are like that, but I think most people are not like that. I think most people do want to be liked. And maybe DeChambeau is one of those guys that bit off a little more than he could chew. People chose Brooks Koepka's side because he's more personable. He seems a little cooler, like you'd rather hang out with him than DeChambeau, the scientist. And so now people have kind of turned on DeChambeau. They're booing. They're yelling Brooksy all the time. They're heckling him. Maybe it's just a matter of, he wants to be. He doesn't want to be the enemy. He doesn't want to be the bad guy here in this rivalry. He doesn't want fans to choose the other side and root against him. He doesn't like that. Right? It goes back to the scene we discussed previously weeks ago from Scarface. Say goodnight to the bad guy. You're never going to see a bad guy like this. And Pacino, as Tony Montana says, right, you need people like me. But not everybody can be like that. Not everybody wants to be that bad guy. It seems like Koepka doesn't care. It seems like DeChambeau may care what other people think or how they treat him. And Jeremy didn't want to get into the whole COVID thing. We never mentioned it on this show. I'll mention it, though. I think it's a stupid excuse. I have no problem. You don't want to get vaccinated. That's fine. I've always said I'm not going to tell you to get vaccinated. Do what you want. But just be honest. DeChambeau's excuse was, I don't want to take up any vaccines. I want to save them for the people who need them. There's no issue. There's no shortage. If you don't want to get vaccinated, that's fine. Just say it, right? Just be honest. Instead of a lousy excuse like, well, I don't want to use up a vaccine when I don't need it. Other people do. Well, there's plenty out there. So just say you don't want to get it. That'd be fine with me. I'm sure a lot of people have a problem with that, but at least you're being honest, and I wouldn't care any less. Anyways, there's a new sports documentary. Netflix has released it, I think, last night. A 5-part documentary series on what we know as the Malice at the Palace, the brawl in 2004 between the Pacers and the Pistons. When they went into the stands, fought the fans, you know it very well. Now, I've shared my story before that I got home. It was a Friday night. The game was on ESPN. It was a blowout. This sounds almost like too good to be true, the timing of this, because that's one of those that, I remember watching that. Right, just like when something happens, everybody says they were there when Hank Aaron hit his record home run. Oh, I was there that night. Right? It's like, the stadium only fits, 40,000. I've heard a million people say they were there. But I did actually see this happen live on TV. That is the honest truth. I came home. It was a Friday night. Came home from a friend's house. And I didn't care about the game because it was a blowout. But there was only, I turned it on with like a minute and a half left. The brawl happened with about 44 seconds left. I turned it on just before it happened. And I didn't care about the game. It was a blowout. Back then, Sports Center was the big deal. So I was waiting for the night Sports Center, or maybe Baseball Tonight, but I think it was Sports Center I was waiting on, like the 11 p.m. or 10 p.m. Sports Center. All right, Sports Center, you get all your highlights. I was out for the night with some friends. I came home. This was before smartphones. Sports Center used to be all about highlights. So I was looking forward. I said, this game's a blowout, but it's almost over. Let me wait for Sports Center so I could catch up on everything that happened tonight. I'm going to get all my highlights, see what happened in the NBA. It was, I think, October, so, football, well, it was a Friday night, so maybe some college football, whatever it was, want to see my highlights. And as I'm sitting there waiting for this game to end, I was by myself, the brawl broke out, and I could not believe what I was seeing. And the players were going into the crowd and fighting, and it was one of those that even though you're not involved, even though you're not in danger, like you almost get a pit in your stomach watching it, like knowing that what you're seeing is just like a terrible thing. Like as a broadcaster, in minor league baseball, I broadcasted a lot of games where there were brawls. And one brawl was the worst I've ever seen. The cops actually had to be called because nobody was breaking it up. Players had to go to the hot. It was brutal. I still have the videos. I won't share them. But it was the worst brawl I've ever seen at a baseball field. And I was sitting there in the press box. I was safe, but just being there watching it, like you just get like almost like feel sick. Like this is not good. You don't want to see people get hurt. Fans were screaming. Like, this is not a good situation. That's how I felt watching that game in 2004 in my living room on the other side of the country, right? I had nothing to do with it, but you just knew, like, this is not good. Not good for anyone involved. Not good for the league. At the time, he was known as Ron Artest. He lays down on the scores table. Soda's thrown at him. So Netflix, he goes into the stands. Netflix is coming out with a 5-part documentary with unseen footage. Right, they got like the other cameras, this footage that wasn't maybe broadcasted on TV. They have unseen footage. They do all these interviews. Jermaine O'Neal from South Carolina was like a producer of all this. He brought this whole thing together. They sit down with the players. They talk to Reggie Miller. They talk to, I believe, Artest or Meta World Peace is in it. All that sort of stuff. It's supposed to be really good. 5 parts. Similar. It's almost like a Last Dance or a 30 for 30. I am looking forward to it. I'm going to check it out. But we did have on the show about 2 months ago in the same week we had the athlete formerly known as Ron Artest, Meta World Peace on the show, and Anthony Johnson, who were both involved, both part of the Pacers. Now, of course, Artest was right in the middle of it. He was the one that was involved. It was his hard foul that started it all. You know, the backstory, which they lay out in this documentary, the Pistons had just won the NBA Finals. The Pacers were a team that were always challenging for the Finals and couldn't get there. So this was early on the next season after the Pistons just won. The Pacers were on the road in Detroit. They were blowing out the Pistons. So, you know, that was almost like getting back at them. They're the defending champs, kind of a rival at the time. You're on the road. The Pacers thought they could be a championship team. They're blowing them out. And as the story goes, Jamal Tinsley tells Artest, like, okay, now you can go get him, which was the signal to go give him a hard foul. We're up by 20 in the final minute. We have this game won. Right now, we've already delivered a message on the scoreboard. Deliver another message. And so Tinsley told him, like, okay, now's the time. And Ron Artest, right at that time, we know, he was not somebody he wanted to mess with, so he committed a hard foul on Ben Wallace. And then Wallace turns around, shoves Artest. That starts it all. Then the fans get involved. Artest lays down on the table because that's what his therapist told him. Whenever he gets into a situation like that, step away, right? Lay down, count to five, calm down. That's what he's trying to do. Somebody throws a soda at him, and he just loses it, as we know, goes into the stands, attacks the fan, John Green, who he later has said he's become friends with. So we had the athlete now known as Meta World Peace on the show. This was back in June. And of course, when you have Meta World Peace on the show, you have to ask him about it. So we'll hear from both Meta World Peace and Anthony Johnson from this show who were involved in that. But here's what Meta World Peace had to say when he talked to us back in June from his experience in the Malice at the Palace.
Obviously, I was a part of the brawl. And the fan that hit me with the cup, you know, we're friends now. But when I spoke to him about it, you know, he apologized. He was just saying he was a little drunk. That's what happens sometimes at arenas. You know, we got people that's excited. We want the fans to stay excited about the game. You know, I mean, some of the language, we could do without. But you know what? That's been happening for years. You know, that's become a part of the sport. I mean, I don't want a boring arena. I want a hostile arena. Just don't want people hitting. I think any hitting, physical objects, that's not called for. You know, fans need to think about what's happening, you know, when you're coming into an arena. You know, I wasn't about defending. I wasn't going to defend myself because it was nothing to defend. It was only a cup. It wasn't like it was someone in front of me. The bigger issue to me was the disrespect. You know, that was the biggest issue. You know, that's never happened before, you know, where someone just threw something at me. So I was just like, you know, yeah, I'm not going to let you just throw a cup. That was the ultimate form of disrespect. And although it was just a cup, you don't prepare. You don't go into an arena and say, okay, I'm going to get hit with a cup today, and I'm just going to tell that fan that he's a bad boy. Right? You go into the arena ready to play a basketball game, and you're ready to get – you're going into that arena with a killer mindset. They say Jordan got the killer instinct. Well, what does that mean? That means you're going into an arena with a killer instinct to play basketball, right? And that instinct translates to anything that's happening within those 2 hours, you know, that you're playing basketball. So that was, you know, I was in it. I was in a zone. We was up 20 points against Detroit.
Yeah.
You know, and I was in a zone competitively competing. And then when I got hit, you know, I was very, very highly, highly upset.
Yeah, I would say. That was Meta World Peace explaining the Malice at the Palace with us here on the show back in June. I just love the idea of Meta going and telling him he was a bad boy, which is what he references there, right? I'm not going to go tell him he's been a bad boy. Imagine that. He goes into the crowd, confronts the fan, and just tells and uses that phrase. You're being a bad boy right now, Mr. John Green. Your mother would not be happy, you bad boy. That was Meta World Peace explaining it. Anthony Johnson, Charleston's own, was part of that Pacers team as well. I don't know if he was included in the documentary or interviewed. I'm not sure, but he was involved. He got suspended because of his role in the Malice at the Palace. And Anthony Johnson joined us a few days after Meta World Peace back in June as things worked out. Of course, had to ask him about it. Here's what Anthony Johnson had to say about that night.
Initially, when it happened, when I saw Ronnie going to the stands and players going after it, I was like, oh, my God. Like, we just knew, you know, the NBA is always, you do not go in the stands. So once that occurred and they started swinging, you know, it was part of we're dead wrong. You know, those players and our team was dead wrong. And the other part is our championship season probably going down the drain. You know, it was a mixed bag of emotions. And once fans started coming on the court, you know, it was one of those sense of we probably need to defend ourselves because, you know, Detroit fans are pretty unruly. But I'm disappointed that I was a part of it. I should have kind of stayed clear. But it was a bad night. It was a bad night for the NBA, bad night for the Indiana Pacers, bad night for all the individuals involved. And hopefully it will never occur again. And that's why we need to get this fan behavior under control so it does not occur again.
That was Anthony Johnson here on the show back in June. That last point being made because at that time, that's when we had some incidents in the NBA playoffs with fans throwing things at players this year or whatever, you know, all the different incidents and acts that occurred during the postseason. But that was Johnson's recollection or memories from his involvement in the malice at the Palace. New documentary, 5-part documentary on Netflix dropped about this incident 17 years ago. And it's one of those that as a sports fan, I think it is one of those, do you remember when or where you were when? I do remember. I consider myself fortunate that I did see it live. Especially back then, there was no social media. You couldn't go on Twitter right afterwards and see the highlights. Right? You had to try to figure it out, wait till the SportsCenter the next morning. Like, wait, what happened? They weren't going to show everything on TV. I did see it live. I was lucky. I got home just in time, turned the TV on. I thought, this game's not worth watching, but we're almost at SportsCenter. And then little did I know what would unfold. And I could not believe what I was watching unfold on that TV that night. I do look forward to that documentary. And if you're a basketball fan, if you remember that ugly incident from 17 years ago, I think it is worth watching. Jermaine O'Neal is the producer. He was involved. He delivered a punch to one of the fans on the court. He said this is to present their side of things, right? That they have a little bit of a side of it. They were unfairly criticized, or at least maybe the fans deserve more blame than we've put on the fans. So anyways, we'll see how the documentary is presented, but I look forward to checking it out. Coming up, I've been talking about the coaches poll the last 24 hours and how predictable it was for the upcoming college football season. Does that mean that we should expand the college football playoff? We'll get to that next. It's the Morrow Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Coming up, should the coaches poll show, or does that show, that we need a larger college football playoff? We'll get to that here in the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Plus, Clemson's quarterback has another new sponsorship deal for name, image, and likeness. And this one I can get more behind than the other. We'll get to that coming up here on the Morrow Midday Show. Next hour, what should we expect from Clemson and South Carolina's offenses this year? Get to that next hour. But we've been talking about this top 25 coaches poll, which, of course, is very predictable. The first one that was released yesterday, Phil Steele put out his top 10 all the way back in February and nailed the 10 teams. We know how predictable college football can be. So I saw Mike Greenberg on Get Up this morning make the case that this points to why we need an expansion of the college football playoff because of how predictable college football and these rankings are. Here was Greenberg talking with Paul Feinbaum this morning on ESPN's Get Up about this exact thing. Does that predictable poll yesterday give us more of a reason to eventually expand the playoff in college football?
For as long as you and I have known each other, I have been opposed to expanding the college football playoff, which it now appears certain they're going to do. Call me an idiot, but I think the fact that I could have told you who those five teams that are ranked in the top five yesterday were going to be 3 years ago. I could have told you 3 years ago who they were going to be. That is actually the best argument for expanding the playoff. It will, in the long run, give more teams a fighting chance. What do you think?
Greeny, only because I've gone through withdrawal. Greeny, you are an idiot for this reason.
Okay.
You know what I'm about to say. I agree with you in principle. We could. None of this is brain needs brain surgery to come up with the answer to this because it's so simple. But that's what's wrong with college football. We can predict it. So you have to do something. And that something is expanding the playoff. You can't argue it. You can't defend it for a thesis or a dissertation. But it's the only answer. If you add eight more, you open the door. And next year on this date, we won't be able to predict who those 12 are. Yes, we'll be able to predict the four or five. And you bring a lot more people into the equation. It's inclusive. Call me crazy. Call me an idiot. But I think it's the only way to save college football from itself.
Feinbaum and Greeny this morning on Get Up. I have to be honest, I was pretty confused by Feinbaum's answer. It seemed like he was talking out of both sides of his mouth the entire time. He called Greeny an idiot and then I think agreed with him and then, I don't know, and then called himself an idiot as well. I don't know. I was kind of confused. But the point being, they were saying, both of them seemed to be in agreement, this should lead to an expansion of the college football playoff, which I have always disagreed with. And I'll make this point real quick because we have to hit a break. But the same teams are going to win. You may give those other teams an opportunity, but it's not going to change anything. The same teams, the top four or five teams, will still win. We see this a lot in life where people will maybe make excuses. Right? Oh, if I had that person's money, right, I'd be in that same position. Or if I had his good looks, or if I grew up in that family, or if I had the connections of his father, this or that. But at the end of the day, you know what? Maybe that person is just harder working or more talented. Yes, there are examples of nepotism, this and that, but a lot of the times, right, maybe they're just smarter than you. Sure, they grew up in, they had some better opportunities because of the family, but you know, at the end of the day, they also were just smarter, or harder working, or had a better idea, or more of a people's person, whatever it may be. But we all say that. We look at somebody else where we wish we were, and say, oh, it just, if I had that opportunity, or if I knew that person. Sometimes they are just simply, though, better than you, even with those opportunities. Same idea here. We could give an opportunity to a UNC and Iowa State. We'll find out that at the end of the day, yeah, Alabama is still just better. So too is Clemson and Ohio State. And it's not because the playoff is exclusive. It's just simply because they're better. It's not because they get more opportunities. No, it's just because they are better. And Feinbaum said, if we go to 12 teams, won't be able to predict the 12. I'm not so sure. Phil Steele predicted all 10 back in February. So I don't know how much 12 would change anyways. But I continue to disagree. I don't think we need to expand the playoff. And even though yesterday's ranking in college football in general is very predictable, I don't think an expanded playoff would solve that. I don't know if I have a better solution or answer other than some drastic changes like limiting scholarships, which I wouldn't be a fan of. This is just how it is. Football's built off of these dynasties, and an expanded playoff is not going to change that. We'll wrap up hour two next. DJ Uiagalelei has a new sponsorship deal. This one I like. It's the Mora Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers. Lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
DJ Uiagalelei has a new sponsorship deal, and this one I like. As we wrap up hour two of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. We've been talking about this top 25 coaches poll that came out yesterday. Last segment played the audio from Mike Greenberg on Get Up this morning saying, this is a reason, this obvious poll, the same teams is another reason why we should expand the playoffs. And we all can be guilty of this where we think, man, if I just had that opportunity, I'd be in that same position. Right? Like Jeff Bezos started his company with a loan from like his parents. A lot of money. I think it was like $500,000 or something. Right? I could sit here and say like, oh, if only my parents financed my, or gave me a loan of $500,000, I could start an Amazon. But I couldn't because Bezos is smarter than me. He was more creative. He had a better idea than I did. He had more foresight than I do currently. And at the end of the day, again, he's just smarter than me. You could give me the same opportunity. I don't think I would develop the same type of company as he did. Sometimes people are just better or smarter or a better fit for that role or more charming or whatever it may be than even you if you had the same opportunities. And it's the same idea here. You could give these other schools an opportunity by expanding the playoff and then find out, you know what, even with the same opportunities, they're still not as good as Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, maybe even Oklahoma, Georgia. I don't think anything would change. DJ has signed on with Dr. Pepper through name, image, and likeness, and will be part of their new Fansville commercials. This is after he signed on with Bojangles. I'm not a very big Bojangles guy, but I do love Dr. Pepper, and I like this sponsorship deal. More thoughts on that coming up. Plus, what should we expect from Clemson and South Carolina's offenses this year? Hour 3 next. More on Midday Show on ESPN Radio.